Drawing room over here.
Now, whether they're herding sheep, chasing a bull, or keeping the internet tolerable, there's no wonder why we call dogs man's best friend. And for all the dog lovers out there, there's a new documentary that should have you very excited. We Don't Deserve Dogs, it's called, and it presents vignettes from around the world showing the very different ways that dogs fit into specific cultures and introducing us to the people who make them part of their lives. Rose Tucker is the film's producer. Matthew Salleh is the director. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having us.
Well, great to be here. Congratulations on the film, on the documentary. I want to start with, I guess, a fairly obvious question. What's your favourite dog? Rose, at the end of this process, is there a favourite for you?
Oh, that's such a hard question. It's like picking your favourite child.
Do you have a dog yourself?
Well, I wish we did. The funniest thing is we live in New York now and we live in a very small rented one-bedroom apartment and we are not allowed to have pets.
And we also figure that with traveling around the world to create these stories, it wouldn't be very fair to a dog to be gone, you know, 50% of the time.
No, indeed. Not as an owner then, as an observer, is there any particular breed that stands out for you?
Well, I grew up with Labradors, so I have a soft spot for Labradors. But in our
film, hear you say that. I'm a Labrador owner myself, so you're off on the right foot.
Yeah, I grew up with them my entire life. Always had one, more often two, and they're just beautiful, beautiful dogs. But I was introduced to a bull terrier on this shoot, and I now have a very big soft spot for those dogs as well. They're gorgeous.
Well, let's talk about it. Where did the idea for the documentary begin? Was it one too many dog clips on YouTube? Why did you think dogs as a subject matter really deserved delving into this way?
Well, with our films, we like to tell stories about seemingly sort of everyday subjects that people might not think too much about. Our previous film was all about barbecue culture around the world. And it was actually on that shoot that we noticed everywhere we went, there was always a dog present. And dogs just form a part of people's lives no matter where you are in the world. So for us, it was sort of a logical next film for us to make.
Yeah, and I think it's just such a wonderful way to explore this very special relationship that humans have with dogs, but also just a great way to look at humans as a species themselves and how they treat each other and how you know a dog looks at its owner with such devotion and loyalty. And you know, we really wanted to pose that question of, like, you know, do we as humans deserve the love that they show us?
Well, exactly. You really do provide a window into these different cultures that you take us through in the piece. You can tell me which city it was in the first part of the film where you're really getting the dog's perspective of the world, of the people around them as well.
Yeah, it was slightly backbreaking labor filming dogs. I realized very early on in the filming that everything's very low. There was a scene we had in a pub in Scotland where I found that, like, you know, walking a lot, like crawling along the sticky floor was always the way to get the best shots. But yes, you're talking about our friend Chino, who is from Santiago in Chile.
Well, and turns out he has a number of names, right?
Yeah, he has a number of names. He is what they call a cutros, we would call him a street dog, but what we learned was that these street dogs aren't abandoned but actually very loved for. And Chino had about 8 different owners. It explains why he's so fat in the film. I think he gets fed about 8 times a day.
And the owners didn't necessarily realize that he had these other lives going on.
Exactly. And one of the people that looked after him had connected a few of the dots. Like, she had found other people that also cared for this dog, and hence she realized he was known by 3 different names. But even while we were filming, we discovered other people that she didn't know about who'd been feeding him and looking after him. So he really had this whole network throughout his neighborhood, at places he could go where he felt safe, where he could get fed, get given water.
He's incredibly loved.
Exactly. Oh, he has got a whole plan worked out.
He does. But you show how he's bringing this love and this kindness and friendship and warmth into so many different lives, yet one stray dog manages to just bring this happiness, this joy to people.
Yeah, and you know, it was really beautiful to film. You know, we sort of He's a dog that follows his own rules. So a person we were working with in Chile sort of told us about the story and organized a few things for us. But we had no idea, you know, we flew down there with no idea whether he'd turn up. And, you know, they're like, well, he sometimes hangs out at this store. You could go there. And thank goodness the first day that we turned up, it was like he was sitting waiting for his close-up, you know. And then ever since then, we just followed him wherever he went. And we had a very
So how quickly did you realize he would be your opening central character?
Oh, well, that was probably more found in the edit. I mean, you know, we sort of shot the whole film, and then sort of, you know, being vignettes from around the world, you get this really fun process of sort of doing the jigsaw puzzle and putting them all together.
But his was such a warm, lovely story. Like you said, it just felt like the right way to start, kick things off before we get a little more serious
That's
with some
right.
of the other scenes in the film.
Because then you get into some far more difficult situations and so on. But look, how do you decide where to go? I mean, there's dogs everywhere, right? So how did you decide which cities, what parts of the world? Is you're going to some far-flung places. How do you decide that?
Yeah, it's tricky. You really could go literally anywhere, but I guess we wanted it to be as geographically broad as possible. So we wanted to hit, you know, different regions of the world. We knew we wanted to get a story in, you know, a Muslim country, for example, where dog ownership isn't really a thing. Dogs are considered dirty. So we knew we wanted to capture that sort of opposing side of dog ownership.
Touch on that one for us. How does that work in that culture where the idea of having a pet dog is not what we would be used to?
Sure, yeah. This was actually interesting for me because my father's actually Malay, so he was had a Muslim background, and so he moved to Australia when he was 12, and we eventually had pet dogs. But I knew that there was always this thing where like some family back home in Malaysia were a bit uncomfortable with it, and what we learned was that in some versions of reading Muslim doctrine, dogs are considered unclean. But we got a huge spectrum of opinions over it. Some people are like, well, that just means you have to wash your hands. Some people mean that you can't have the dog in the house. And we met this wonderful woman in Karachi in Pakistan who very, very devoted, to her faith, but found this injured stray dog and took him into her life, believing that is what her God would have wanted her to do. So she was sort of appealing to a higher power, I guess. It's a very powerful story, especially from a pretty brave woman bucking a lot of norms in a pretty conservative country.
The most I guess serious, we sort of touched on this earlier, but the most affecting scene in the film is in Uganda. You talk to a number of former child soldiers about their dogs, and some of the stories we hear from them about their own experiences as child soldiers are just harrowing. They are just appalling. Tell me about working with that community and what you found about the role a pet dog has now played in their lives and in their recovery.
Yeah, I think Lucy, one of the women we speak to in the film, puts it best when she says, "I didn't know dogs could be trained to be your friend." You know, these kids, as you know, grew up. Dogs were not usually kept as a, you know, part of the family. Like they were around, but mainly for like protection and things like that. And in fact, many of these child soldiers had horrible experiences with dogs while they were at war. So they have, you know, bad memories of being attacked by dogs and things like that. So for them to learn that dogs can be your friend, and it was just an amazing experience.
And I think for me, what was really powerful was that most of the former child soldiers are sort of in their mid-30s, which is same age as us, and they grew up as children dealing with this trauma where they were forced to do horrible things for warlords, basically. And it was, you know, we, like I said at the start, we wanted to pose this question of like, what are we as humans, what capacity do we have not only for love but for hate? And I think forcing children to murder people in their own community is about the most horrible thing a human being can do. And to watch, and you know, and the stigma and the PTSD and the you know, the complex relationship that those former child soldiers have once they had to go back into their community, it was quite hard to hear. But then, you know, there was basically a charity that was teaming them up with dogs. They sort of helped these stray dogs find a home, and then, you know, these stray dogs help them through their PTSD. And the most powerful thing was when they chose to retell some of their horrific stories on film, and they're doing it holding on to the dog the whole time.
This is the thing. You know, you let them tell their story, and they are just, you know, as you say, some of the most difficult to imagine experiences that these people as children have been through. But the affection, you can just see that with the dog on their lap, you know, how much it has helped them, is helping them deal with this today.
Yeah, we did have to be really careful about, you know, digging up past trauma. We made sure to learn as much as we could before we went in and started filming. And what we discovered was that telling the stories is a part of the therapy for these people. So in them, they have the power of telling their story. And I think the dogs there as a comfort helps them do that.
How did you manage that, hearing these stories directly from people who've gone through that experience?
Yeah, it's incredibly hard. And, you know, we worked with a charity over there that it was actually a young guy who himself was involved in the conflict. He's from Uganda, and he actually is also a psychologist. And it all started with him starting group therapy sessions effectively in this community. Rosie and I, we work just as a team of two, sort of completely independently. So we sort of go through very long bouts of isolation where we film. And yeah, you kind of do have to take the stories on entirely on your own. But it was the strength of the people we spoke to. You know, we were kind of like, are you sure you want to tell this story? And the telling the story was part of the healing for them. So we were able to facilitate part of that healing process, which is, you know, the whole reason you do a lot of this, I guess.
Yeah, particularly interesting, I think, like Matt said before, where we were all the same age. You know, Matt and I are very lucky that we've had a wonderful upbringing in life, and here's people that are exactly our age who've had, you know, the exact opposite experience.
Yeah, and the strength, and just the fact that they are able to come through it and keep going, keep existing, keep you know, building for their own
resilience communities.
It was very inspiring.
Definitely. No, look, on RN, I'm David Spears. Rose Tucker and Matthew Salleh are my guests in the drawing room. We're talking about their film, We Don't Deserve Dogs. Just give us a snapshot of different parts of the world, how dogs are treated differently. I mean, we have a good idea in Australia of what a pet dog means. We've touched on a couple of the places you visited, but what are some of the most interesting differences in the human-dog relationship that you uncovered?
Okay, well, I mean, we really tried to show the whole gamut of the experience. So on one side, you've got, you know, teenage girls in Peru who lavish their dogs and dress them up in crazy outfits, hold massive birthday parties for them with dog-shaped piñatas and invite 200 Maltese dog guests. You know, you've got that side of it, overdoing the love almost. And then we actually did the complete opposite side of the spectrum. So we actually did film in Vietnam, where we looked at, you know, the culture of eating dogs.
Yeah, that's a little controversial, I guess, to include in a film like this. What was you thinking there?
It was interesting. We would sort of tell people we're making this film about the complete relationship between humans and dogs. And, you know, at first people would go, well, what are you going to do about this? Or almost jokingly thinking that we would just avoid it, you know, and it would have been very easy, I think, to avoid it. But then I think its absence would have spoken more loudly. And for me, you know, like growing up as an Asian Australian, you know, there was always a crude joke about eating dogs at the end of every insult. Mm-hmm. And for me, I wanted to know, I want to hear actually what they think and what they say without judgment. Mm-hmm. You know, we never present our opinions in our films. We let people tell their stories in their voice. And I think, you know, it's been a tough thing. It's been something that has challenge some audiences so far, but it's something that I think, you know, just I'm really glad that we were able to put it in there, because it was hard to film and it can be very hard to watch, but I think we do it hopefully with a sensitivity that helps form that complete picture.
Yeah, no, I think you do, and you really well illustrate the emotional attachment that's there with dogs in so many different cultures. I mean, at the end of the day, why is that? Is there any common thread here, any universal truth as to why we do have this relationship with dogs, and we have had for so long?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's an interesting, we've had our heads so stuck in this story for about last 2 years that we sort of take it for granted. And it is just this oddest little relationship that, you know, we always joke that we would want our films to be like the thing that you show aliens when they come down to Earth, and they go like, so we've got this weird thing, there's this one particular animal that we have a very special relationship with. But I think there is something in the way that dogs see us. I think there's something in the I can't quite attribute it, but it's great old saying, you know, be the person your dog thinks you are. And I think that was we've seen some very dark sides of humanity, and you know, you can turn on the news every day and you can drown in all of that, but through these stories we found the most uplifting stories as well. So I think being able to come out of this experience telling these stories and have a great faith in the human condition is something that only dogs could provide, perhaps.
Yeah, no, exactly. And just that unquestioning love that's always there, I suppose, is what so many people who do love dogs, not all do, but those who do love dogs certainly experience and live with. Look, tell us a bit about your experience. You're from Australia, but you're based in Brooklyn these days. What took you there? What took you to New York? Is it just where you need to be to make movies like this?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, not going to lie, we were very much that stereotypical artist wanting to come and live in New York. You know, we love Australia, but it was just time for a change. We'd visited New York several times and we're like, you know what, let's just give it a go.
Yeah, and I think for us as well, it was, you know, being completely independent filmmakers, we've sort of always done it our own way. And I think there's something in that Brooklyn attitude of that sort of, really helped, I think.
And given the weird year we're having in 2020, and that's certainly been the case in New York as much as anywhere, how has that changed the process of finalising a film and putting it out into the world?
We're not going to lie, it's been a little bit disastrous in terms of like timing.
How so?
We were actually slated, we were really honoured to be, we were going to have the world premiere of this film at South by Southwest, a major film and music festival in Austin, Texas.
In March.
And then that was the first major event anywhere in the globe to be cancelled. So that was the start of this journey. So it's been more just a, like, we're very glad that the films, that we got to finish it. I mean, we're shooting a film around the world. That if that had been something we'd half done, I think we wouldn't finish it for about another decade. But
So we are, in a sense, very lucky we finished it when we did. But, you know, after making it for 2 years and we were finally ready to bring it out into the world, to then have to shut it down and bide our time for 6 more months effectively. But, you know, it's finally coming out now. It's going to, people are going to see it, which is what we care about. So it is happening.
Well, congratulations to you. I'm so glad you have, because it's a terrific film. So moving in so many ways. Thank you both so much for talking to us.
Thank you for having us.
That's Matthew Sulla and Rose Tucker, my guests in The Drawing Room, and their film We Don't Deserve Dogs. It's screening as part of the Brisbane International Film Festival. And that's it for RN Drive for tonight. But remember that you can find all of our interviews whenever you want. Just go to the ABC Listen app and search for RN Drive or The Drawing Room, and it's all right there, just waiting for you. I'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Have a great night.